Israel's security cabinet has voted through a plan to seize control of all of Gaza indefinitely. The finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, said there would be no withdrawal, not even in exchange for hostages who were taken by Hamas back in October of 2023. And another minister, Zeev Elkin, said that ramping up the offensive over the next few months would open what he called a window of opportunity to secure a ceasefire before the US President Donald Trump visited the region next week. We can talk now to James Elder, who is UNICEF's global spokesperson. And James, thanks a million for taking our call this morning. What are your thoughts on this plan, this vote by the security cabinet in Israel and endorsed by Benjamin Netanyahu to seize control of all of Gaza?
Audrey, it's the worst case scenario for the civilians of Gaza. Firstly, of course, it's their home. Secondly, so many of them right now, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people in Gaza have returned to their homes and are staying in tents over the rubble. And many of those made it very clear that they don't want to leave. And that's simply because when they've been told to go to safe zones before, those have been bombed countless times. So they're well aware of what waits them. So this idea of a full occupation, remembering, as you said there, Audrey, that at the same time that they will control aid. So you have a population on its knees, now being told there will be a ramping up of a military offensive. No one quite understands what that looks like when 16,000 girls and boys have been killed. And we are 2 months into no aid being allowed in, and they're talking about, you know, militarizing and weaponizing that aid. So it's the most terrifying scenario possible for women, children, families in Gaza.
And we hear from journalists reporting on this that Palestinians will be moved, will be forced to a small area of the south. I mean, presumably we're talking about well over 1 million Palestinians.
Well over. If you read it, and it's hard to get a clear guide because most of these things are stated, including the militarization of aid. We haven't seen anything written down there. But if we're talking about people being pushed south, then exactly, Audrey, what's the plan to push the entire Gaza population into a southern humanitarian zone and make life so miserable for them that people opt for quote-unquote voluntary resettlement? I mean, the intensity, because yet these things do drift out of the news, I'm pleased to say, not yours, but so many outlets, the airstrikes have been as intense as ever, and there are daily displacement orders. So already 70% of the entire Gaza Strip falls under these displacement orders or no-go zones. So we again have hundreds of thousands, more than 400,000 Palestinians who are shattered, utterly exhausted from the destruction and violence in ways that we can't imagine, and I can't convey. And they're being told again they have to move to areas where we're told the United Nations and all those agencies who deliver aid and who know how to deliver aid will not be able to do it, but we're told that it will be militarized, that humanitarian assistance now will become a tool for political and military pressure. I mean, this is why we are seeing malnutrition, Audrey, for children double between February to March. So further control over aid operations by a party to the conflict, it just means it's not going to reach those who need it most. Now, even if we were to discard humanitarian principles about politicization and militarization of aid, and humanitarian principles are not ours to discard, the problem is this won't work. And the real problem is that's well known. I mean, are those officials going to vaccinate? Are they going to treat highly specialized acute malnutrition, repair water systems that they are blowing up? You know, the delivery of aid by Israeli forces is set to fail from the very beginning. And the real concern is that's probably well known. Remembering, you know, that before the ceasefire, we were told time and again, that all aid was being facilitated. Then during the ceasefire, the United Nations and many, many brave partners brought in hundreds and hundreds of trucks, many times more than prior to that. That is yet more evidence that humanitarian actors are good at this. And on the other flip side, they're not interested in it.
Russia was accused of deliberately starving people in southern Ukraine at the outset of the war in 2022, using starvation as a weapon of war. Is Israel doing the same?
Well, at the moment, I think it's the statements that have been made, Audrey, You know, UNICEF, of course, as your listeners know, we're a non-political organisation. A lot of our work on the ground, being very, very frontline on the ground, is because we don't take a political approach. But let's be very clear: the statements being made in the first weeks after the horrors of October 7 by the most senior Israeli officials that are now absolutely doubled down, very, very clear on record, 18 months later. Around aid being restricted, blocked entirely so as to force a surrender, they make those positions very clear. We do not have to arbitrate or to decipher them. The statements being made by the most senior Israeli officials are very, very clear on the tactics here.
The international community, James Elder, we heard earlier on the programme a sense that the US President Donald Trump is no longer engaged on this particular issue, that his focus and attention has moved elsewhere. Talk of a ceasefire is not very hopeful at all. Is the international community disengaged?
I get a sense that large parts of the international community are engaged and that they've made it clear that they will not tolerate this continuation of horrible harm to civilians and that they will seek to reject what are really draconian restrictions on humanitarian aid. But we must be very clear, there are only certain centres of power that have real leverage here, and we have to keep imploring that international law is not respected, because it hasn't been respected, but it starts to be acknowledged, and that we start very simply, Audrey, to see the civilians of Gaza as civilians. And that's been a problem from the very outset, and that's where we continue to implore in ways that we haven't really done before, Audrey, in terms of international actors and those with influence. And I've said it before that for UNICEF, the advocacy that we do behind closed doors and in public forums like this one for children at the wrong end of the stick is very, very straightforward. It's that those children get a classroom, that those children are free from violence, that those children get access to water and medicines. Gaza is the first time in my professional career spanning just over two decades that we have to begin by advocating that children in Gaza are in fact children, that children need to be acknowledged as such, and then we work into the international laws that all these member states are party to. That is deeply, deeply troubling.
And you want a ceasefire, presumably a full permanent ceasefire, and yet we are hearing this talk now of this plan to seize control of all of Gaza. Israel say they want to eradicate Hamas after nearly 2 years of not being able to do that. You must lose hope constantly.
It's a great question, and I don't think personally that, you know, my own sense isn't relevant, and I'm very fortunate that on my many missions to Gaza, I've stayed in very close contact with a whole range of families, of young people, of doctors, of volunteers. And yes, there are times in the last month or two that I've heard a level of despair and despondency that I have not previously heard from people who have a strength that I can't quite get a hold of. It is something to behold. So they continue to hold on. Now, the point is, we see young people around the world protesting on their behalf. We do need those people in power to do a lot, lot more. And yes, it is a ceasefire, obviously, because a ceasefire, we saw this. Again, it's about evidence. It's not about he said, she said. We saw a ceasefire. More than 150 hostages have been released when there have been ceasefires. Less than 10 through military means. So that's very, very clear. The most recent ceasefire earlier this year, we saw a massive improvement, Audrey, in the nutrition of girls and boys, because there was food in the market, because we got a chance as organisations like UNICEF to repair water systems. You know, children could get safe access to healthcare systems, and those healthcare systems actually had drugs. So a ceasefire does everything that every civilian in the Middle East, including in Israel, it seems, wants, which includes the hostages. Without that ceasefire, at least remove the blockade from Gaza, at least remove the most abhorrent breach of all international humanitarian laws, which is, as you said earlier, forcing our population into just acute nutritional stress by not allowing aid in. So a ceasefire ticks all the boxes. Whilst we wait for that, and we waited the entirety of 2024, Audrey, while we wait for that, let's at least embrace some decent levels of international humanitarian law and let aid through humanitarian actors flow back to children and women and families in the Gaza Strip.
James Elder, UNICEF's global spokesperson, many thanks indeed.